Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Well, welcome everybody to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler, and I'm excited to be with you. Man, this is going to be a great show. Gosh, those skips there in the broadcast there. I apologize for that, but excited to be here with you. Welcome if you're just a first-time listener. For those regular listeners, and I know many of you catch this on recording after the fact, late at night, returning emails or exercising, jogging, catching the podcast on iTunes. Thank you so much for listening in. So much work goes into trying to create great content for these shows. And I'm just grateful that many of you find the time each week to listen in. For those that are new, my name is Mark Kohler, your host, a attorney, CPA, family man, entrepreneur, author, surfer, trying to hold it all together, like many of you, so many moving parts, spinning plates, trying to keep living that dream. So I think I share a lot of my own personal topics and struggles and challenges throughout the show over the months and years, just because I feel like I'm in the trenches with so many of you as an entrepreneur. So exciting times, and today is no different. I'm really, really excited about today's topic. This is the Emergency Preparedness for Your Business and Personal Life show. Now, I'll introduce this more fully here a little later, but it is just crazy what we continue to experience around the country, obviously around the world as well, but around the country this week is going to be the coldest week on record in the century in many areas of the country. It is bitterly cold out there. It is creating an emergency situation for many, many people. And I thought that was a good reason to hold this show this week. I've had this show before. I'm hoping it's going to evolve even into more on this particular episode. I welcome many of your comments, your suggestions via email or online, if you'd like to call in, we welcome that. If you want to send me an email right now, for those that are listening live, and I can see a good group of folks listening on their phones as well as on their computer, please shoot me an email, mark@markjkohler.com. If you have a story or an experience or some suggestion that could help many of us, if you've been through an emergency in your business, we'll talk about the personal stuff too. We're going to hit it both. They're so intertwined. And I think many of you will find this to be a very, very informative radio show. And heck, I'm a scoutmaster, so I teach the emergency preparedness merit badge to my boys on a regular basis. So we're gonna be diving into it. It's gonna be good. As every week goes, we hit a few of our important topics that were set forth in the newsletter. If you haven't signed up for our newsletter, please do. We've got great content in there every week. There's a lot of contributors throughout the office. Matt Sorensen has a great topic blog article today on the living will. So it's very interesting what this family went through, the Munoz case. And so you'll want to check out his blog article on what is a living will and how it could impact your family. And I have an emergency preparedness plan blog article with a checklist of items. So we're going to be going through that during the show to some degree, but you may want to print that out and read it, go over it with your family. This is something I challenge my Boy Scouts to do, is they have an emergency preparedness meeting with their family. Well, I'm going to encourage you to have one with your staff, or if you're the only business, you're the head cook and bottle washer and maitre d' of your business, have a kind of a circumspective of meeting with yourself and look at what are my emergency strategies if something were to happen in my business. So am I doing everything? I think you'll, again, see this checklist to be very informative. Few important deadlines. January 31st is almost upon us. 1099 forms must be issued. W-2s need to be issued. For those of you that have a standard operational business, this is a little busy. You've got to get your W-2s out. Please do not, blindside our poor Cynthia at the office working nonstop. I know she listens into the show. She's probably, I don't know if she's laughing or rolling her eyes, but she's working some late nights. And if you call her on the 31st and say, I got to get my W-2s out, she might reach through the phone and strangle you. So try to get in touch with her today at the latest and let her know if you need help with W-2s or 1099s. Her and Olivia are a kind of a 1-2 punch team over there, and they can help you at the accounting firm. And you know how to get a hold of us. Just, you know, click on any of the links there on the newsletter. And if you're listening today, you know where we're at. So check that out. But that's the most important deadline right now, is the January 31st 1099s and W-2 issue. Other than that, it's just getting your tax info in. If you're wanting to get your taxes done by April 15th, the sooner you get your books over to the team, the better. We would appreciate it. And we'll start pushing forward through February and March and April. Can you believe it's tax season again? Crazy time. Crazy. Woo! One other quick announcement. In my weekly message on the newsletter, I talked about the installment method, which is kind of a unique topic, that if you're going to sell property or a business, you might want to consider the installment method. So I write a little bit about that. You might check it out. But this week, on Wednesday night, I have my monthly webinar. There's a small cost for that, $20. I think on the website it's $30. So if you need a link to get a discount, just email any of the staff and they can send you a link so that you can get it at a cheaper price. But it's $20 a month, and it's for a full hour on my computer screen with me asking questions. It's recorded with video, so you can take notes. It's got a PowerPoint, and we're going to talk about 1031 exchanges, installment sales, charitable remainder trust, capital gains. If you're selling property this year or business, that's the webinar you're going to want to check out. And so once a month, I've got a very in-depth webinar on a specific topic. I prepare for it. That's what the cost for. I mean, it's a lot of work to prepare those. And please engage in that. You'll love it. And you get caught. You, once you're into the webinar system, you get access to all the prior recorded webinars. Great topics there for you to look at. I know Matt Sorensen's got a webinar on Thursday night. You'll want to check that out. It's on taking your retirement plan to the next level. He's going through an updated, in-depth discussion on special self-directed IRA issues. You can click. That's a free webinar, and you want to get to that through the newsletter. Just click on the registration icon there, I guess. Register here. Just click on that, and you're off and running. So there you go. There's some important announcements. Hopefully that's been, helpful to some degree. Some of you find something there. Of course, check out the newsletter for a bunch of other little items. I think you'll love it. But I'm really excited, again, about our topic here that we'll be hitting closer to the bottom of the hour. But until then, we're going to hit our regular tax and legal tip from some of our tipsters that are meeting with clients on a regular basis in the office and around the country, and hearing what they're encountering. So hopefully they can share something that, again, could impact you immediately or one of your family or business members. And our first guest today is a regular contributor, the one and only Dustin Johnson. Dustin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mark.
Well, thank you. We are glad to have you. And I know that it's just the beginning of tax season, so it's not too crazy yet. But
it's just starting to pick up. Just we're feeling the beginnings of it, so it's coming.
This beautiful country we call America and the annual tax reporting process. It's a unique thing. Well, what do you got for us this week? What have you kind of bumped into maybe that might be a little interesting tidbit for some of us?
Well, one thing that I've been working with the client on is some special allocations with their LLC. So I thought I'd talk about that a little bit and how, you know, it's something to look at when you set up an LLC, have a few different partners, different ways to allocate the income.
Ooh, I like that. In fact, if I could even add that, Dustin, there's probably even more to it as options, is when you have these partners, you can allocate income, expenses, losses, some partner may want one thing, another partner want something else. So it could be actually pretty elaborate, couldn't it?
Exactly. Setting up, you have to use an LLC. I guess we need to throw that out first. If you have an S corporation, it's just based on the number of shares that you own. But when you have these LLCs, you can be a lot more flexible. And you can say, okay, this partner is going to take the depreciation expense. If we have a consulting side of the business and a real estate side, a rental side of the business, we can allocate 80% of the income from consulting to one partner, 50% of the rentals to the other partner, based on kind of who's working it and how they're the arrangement, how much money and contributions they've put into it. So there's really a lot of flexibility and tax planning that can go along with using these special allocations.
I like that. Now, it's something that you would have to have indicated in the operating agreement. This is just something you wouldn't want to probably send to you on a post-it, I would suspect. Do you usually ask as the accountant for a copy of the operating agreement with these allocations?
Exactly. We need a copy of the operating agreement. And typically, operating agreements are just going to say, okay, based on the contributions, you're 50-50 owners, and things are going to go 50-50. So it's something that you're going to have to talk to the attorney that's putting your operating agreement together and say, okay, we want to do special allocations. I know there's a few requirements that we have to meet, but this is how we want to do it. We want to, you know, and then you can go into how you're going to allocate income to each other.
Okay. I just got a quick email on this, too. I've got client, you know, listeners right now, just real time here. They're asking, can you change locations from year to year?
Absolutely. And that's a lot of times, depending on the partners and the arrangement up front, say, okay, for X number of years, I get 80% of the income and 20% of the loss, and you get 20 and 80, and then we'll switch it after a few years. So you can be very flexible with these things. But like I said, there are a few things that you can't do. You can't use it purely to avoid taxes, and you can't make a capital account or the contributions that you put in. You can't take out more money than you've ever put in. There are a few stipulations that you have to meet for a special allocation to work. But, sorry, that was kind of long-winded. But, yes, to answer that question, you can change them year to year.
Well, and I think you hit on something there, too, is that, folks, I know this is a complicated point, and I'm glad you're bringing this up. A lot of people come into my office and say, hey, Mark, we've got this unique partnership, and it's not 50-50, and we may have S-corps as owners or trusts or whatever, IRAs even. So the special allocation topic comes up. But the point is that even if you don't put money in, you could actually get basis if you were to sign on debt. So that could be an option, right, Dustin, if someone wanted an allocation of losses. And they didn't put a lot of money in, but they may have been a co-signer on the company debt. That could work. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yep. There's just a few different factors that we have to look at, the capital, the debt allocations, things like that. Now, when that debt gets paid back, we need to make sure we're still okay as well. You've got enough contributions or other items that you have. I don't want to get too technical here, but basis in your company for that allocation to work, or we may have to allocate more income to you to get your position in the company back to where it should be.
Okay. And it looks like we have one more quick email on this, too. Mark, you've told me before that you cannot do special allocations with IRAs. Is that still the case? I've said that, Dustin. I don't think it's really wise to do special allocations with IRAs and 401ks. What do you think?
That would probably give me a little bit of heartburn, too, Mark. Just because there can be an easily perceived notion that you're receiving more benefit from your own IRA by taking the income and likewise distributions because of the profits that have been or the contributions from the 401k. So I would tend to frown on a special allocation in that scenario.
Okay, I like that. And folks, what typically happens is someone says, Mark, I want to put my IRA in, and we'll allocate the the gains to the IRA, but I want any losses to come to me, or I want the money to come to me, but the losses to the IRA, or something crazy. And that's where I think the prohibited transactions could be a problem. So that's why I typically say no as well. So lots of options with special allocations. This is something, folks, that you can do. It's not good with a corporation. I'm glad you brought this up, Dustin. And if people want to do special quote-unquote allocations, it's a good thing to make sure their accountants know about it during tax time, because it's got to be reflected on the tax return. So it's a good reminder.
It is. And I guess a plug for you as the law firm as well is when you're doing special allocations, you will want to make sure you go to a lawyer to write up your operating agreement. Because there is other certain language that needs to be included. You can't just say, I want to do it this way and we're going to do it without adding the additional information that talks about substantial economic effect and the other consequences of that make you eligible to do all the special allocations that you want. So you need somebody to write it up in a professional way. Because if it's okay, not written up the right way and it's not correct, then we can't do it as accountants.
All right. Well, Dustin, thank you so much for joining us. And Lisa in the studios told me that we need to add a little bit more pizzazz to the show. So I'm going to give you some kind of departing music here. And this is little Justin Bieber here.
No,
there
no,
we go.
No. Mark, Justin Bieber,
hey, this,
really?
Well, you know, I thought since he was in jail this week, we could kind of celebrate the Justin Bieber, you know, coming out. So
all
I
right,
know you got.
We'll go the jail route. There you go.
There you go.
Awesome! So I love it. I love it. It's great.
There you go. So for all you Justin Bieber fans, there you go. You know, a little reminder that we're all fallible, and if someone gave you $1 billion when you were 18, what would you be doing too? So that's all I want to ask you. You know. So you've got a poor kid with a lot of money to burn. So, you know, I don't know if I could be held to such a high standard either.
No, I'd be tough, that's for sure. I'd like to try,
it'd be tough.
You know, I'd like to try.
Yeah, give me a try. I'll try it. All right. Well, Dustin, thanks so much. Enjoy the taxi. I know we'll catch you in 3 or 4 weeks when you're more in the throes of season, but we appreciate it whenever you can join us.
Hey, not a problem. Thanks again, Mark.
All right, thank you. All right. Okay, well, folks, we're going to jump over now to our other special guest. We've got Lee Chan, a regular contributor on the show. He's our attorney from the law office out in California, right down the hall from me, a business planner, fighter, does it all. He's a huge asset to the firm. We love it whenever he can join the show. So, Lee, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark. Great to be on again.
Well, thank you. I know that you're so busy. You were in depositions earlier this week. It's exciting to see your. For me, this is kind of like Lee's a real lawyer. You know, I just kind of work on, you know, the tax planning and win-win-win and business structures. But when Lee's tearing someone a new one in the conference room and depositions and someone's crying and they're going to court, man, that's real lawyering. I just love it, Lee. How does that make you feel? I don't know. Is it exciting?
Well, there's a lot of work involved to be prepared, but I admit there is some adrenaline rush in, you know, just trying to get the truth out. I mean, that's really what we do in litigation. A lot of it is spent trying to find out, you know, what the truth is and, you know, trying to get it out of people. So,
Wow, it's fun to watch in action. Well, Lee, what do you got for us this week?
Well, when I heard what today's topic was going to be and the timeliness of it, it kind of got me to thinking, you know, we haven't really talked about the issue of identity theft recently. And with, you know, all the stuff that you're hearing about people's information being compromised by Target or Neiman Marcus or there was one store, Michael's recently, just one, and a lot of this may be obvious, but I just wanted to reiterate some of the things that we should all be doing to make sure that, you know, our identity is being protected. So I just wanted to go through some of the things that everyone should be doing right now, especially when you're hearing about all these issues with credit cards, because really, from what I'm hearing from a technological standpoint, we are really at the back of the line in terms of technology with credit cards, and it's really easy to steal compared to some of the other, you know, in Europe or in other places where there's more security protection. So,
well, and it doesn't surprise me that it's a little easier to steal here, because a year or so ago I went to Europe and tried to use a debit card, and it was like opening an account at a credit union. I think they wanted, you know, blood or, you know, four forms of ID in my passport. So it was a little more challenging, that's for sure. But I did feel secure that if someone did steal my credit card, it was going to be tougher for them to use over in Europe. But yeah, here in the U.S., it's nuts. I mean, you go through McDonald's, you just go swipe. They don't sign anything. You don't even sign anything. You don't even put in a debit card anymore. I mean, a PIN number. It's crazy.
Yeah. And so with so many people, I mean, the target, what they were saying, 70 million. So I just wanted to, for people to, you know, make sure that you're using your credit cards and not your debit cards. I mean, that seems obvious, but I go out all the time. I still see people using their debit cards. There are more protections for your credit card than there are for your debit card in terms of trying to dispute the unauthorized charges. You know, we can go into that, but just, you know, if you look that up, I mean, it's all over the internet. But also,
so you're saying, I want to interject this. Now, this is a little bold of you to say. I'm sure some banking representative would not be thrilled to hear what you're saying. And you're saying don't use debit cards?
Don't use debit cards if you want to have more protections from identity theft, okay? Because it's kind of like the presumption when you use a debit card and people want to take the, you know, people, you know, want to use your debit card or something, the money automatically comes out, and it's incumbent upon you to go and chase the money and get it back. Okay. Whereas with a credit card, if someone uses the credit card, puts an unauthorized charge on, you're only liable for the first, I think it's $50, so long as when you get the statement, complain about it and you challenge it within 60 days. Okay. So the money doesn't automatically come out like a debit card would. And so I usually tell people, you know, if you can, use credit cards. I mean, there's this whole other issue of, you know, racking up debt and all that. And that's not what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about, for security reasons, you might want to use credit cards, you know, like at a Target. I mean, if you have to, rather than a debit card.
Yep. Well, I know you've got several tips on this. Let's just go to another one. You had mentioned before to me, just here in the hallway, talking about having some sort of monitoring system. It doesn't have to be expensive, but at least something where you get alerted of certain things happening. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first, the monitoring system is you. Okay, so, like, you know, if you shopped at Target during Christmas or whatever, you need to be looking at your bank statements and your credit card statements very carefully. You should be doing this anyways. But if you see unauthorized charges, then, you know, you need to go through the dispute process, contacting the creditor and disputing it. And there's a lot of information if you go to www.consumer.ftc.gov. They have sample letters there for disputing with the bank, disputing with the credit reporting agency. I mean, it's great. You go under the privacy and identity section, they have sample letters for you to use on. You just plug in your information. So,
okay, give us that website again.
It's the FTC website, and they have a special consumer section, which is www.consumer.ftc.gov. And there's a whole lot of information about, you know, checking your credit reports and how to do fraud alerts, how to dispute your charges, et cetera.
Okay, good. Well, and on that monitoring system, I'll just add too that I love that your irony there is that we have to take personal accountability to be our number one watchdog for our, you know, unauthorized charges. But on the identity theft issue, there's other things. People applying for credit in our names, using our Social Security numbers for a variety of frauds. So this is where I think some of these monitoring systems do a good job with some of those other things, so that you get alerted and you can know what's going on. And there's a variety out there. There's all different prices. I'm not endorsing one or the other, but I have one that I'm happy with, and they can also be working on your credit score at the same time and alerting you to credit inquiries and things like that. So I think that's something in today's day and age we just have to pay for, and it's too bad. You know, 10 years ago, it was a cost we didn't have to bear, but I think it really is important. Lee, anything else on the identity theft topic? I know we could do a whole show on identity theft, but any other quick tip you wanted to share with us?
Just if you see these unauthorized charges, from Target or whatever, first I would do the dispute. I would check all your credit reports. You can do it free at annualcreditreport.com. Okay, you can get one credit report from each agency every 4 months, so you can get three reports within a year, all free, as long as you stagger it out. Okay, get one from Experian, and after 4 months, get another one and see if there's any stuff opened that you didn't authorize. And if there was, put a fraud alert on your account. Then any creditor who wants to open your account will have to call you and get your authorization.
I love it. Well, very good. I want to tell all of our listeners right now, this is an exciting topic as well, not only with just identity theft, but this kind of asset protection scenario of disappearing and privacy. And there's an author, I've tried to get him on the show before, he literally went into hiding, and he's back with several new books. His name is J.J. Luna. He wrote the book 15 years ago titled How to Be Invisible. I quoted him in my Lawyers or Liars book, and literally last year he has published three new books, and we're in contact with him to get him to come on the show. So we'll be doing that in the near future, talking about privacy, identity theft, how to be invisible, at least to some degree, and what it really takes. So be looking forward to that show. So I'm glad you kind of set the stage for that, Lee. Thank you so much.
Anytime, Mark. Love to be on the show.
Okay. Well, since we left with Justin Bieber on the last, guest here with Dustin leaving us, we'll do a little AC/DC here for you. Lee, thanks for being here with us. We'll see you next month, and thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
All right, rock on.
Thanks, Lee. All right. Well, for what it's worth, we don't have a multi-million dollar radio studio here supporting us with little sound effects, so we kind of have to do what we can do. All right, well, folks, we are now to the topic of the hour. I am so excited. As I mentioned earlier on as we introduced this, this emergency preparedness topic, for those that have just joined us, that is the topic for today's discussion. I welcome any phone calls at 646-200-4285. We've got a number of listeners on the chat line, and there was a little note there I missed on the chat line. If Lee would repeat what he said about credit fraud alert. Let me see if we'll get Ray, we'll get you, and I know, Ray, you're a regular listener. I'll have Lee put together a little email to you and send you a couple of those links. Again, folks, we really do try to bend over backwards here for our regular listeners. So if you have a quick email or question about the show, you can email me, Mark, at markjkohler.com during the show or afterwards, and we've got the chat line open. So this emergency preparedness topic is what we're hitting. And as I mentioned earlier, it is a crazy time in the history of the world. There are more natural disasters than ever before. My mom gave me this. My mom's a ferocious reader. She's reading constantly, and I just love her. Every time I go see her, she's got a new book, and she was documenting for me the rapid increase in natural disasters around the world. And this week, of course, we're facing record low temperatures, century records, and it's just scary. What do we expect as we come to summer? We know it's going to be the droughts again are hitting all over. California is facing a terrible drought. So it's just really shocking. So this topic of emergency preparedness is an important one. And in my blog today, I talked about being prepared as a business. And even the Small Business Administration has created a disaster planning guide for small business owners. I give you the link in the blog so that you can go check it out. And I go through a number of items here of what you can do in your business. I'd like to hit several of these today, and I want to bring out a special guest that he's been on our show before. He's a community leader here of ours in the community and in the church that helps people be prepared for emergencies. And he's organized different emergency awareness workshops. He's just he's a hero to me, and I'd love to sit and listen to he and his wife as they talk about the emergency preparedness they've done with their family and in their business, and it's just, I always learn something new. So I've invited him back on the show. His name is Danny Kirkham, here a local Southern Californian, and Danny, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Mark. Thanks for the opportunity to be here.
Oh, you bet. I'm so excited you could find some time to be here. And Danny, I know this is a topic that's a passion for you as well. Let me start out with that. How long have you been, and we'll just quickly do a little introduction here, and then we'll dive into a bunch of tips here, but how long have you been interested in building for emergencies? I mean, this is something that you've been really involved in for years, it appears to me.
That is correct. I remember my first earthquake back when I was in, I think, fifth grade up in the Bay Area, and it's been on my mind ever since. As we started a family and our family grew, we became even more and more concerned about making sure we were taken care of should the disaster happen. You know, in Southern California, we don't hit some national disasters that some other listeners may be facing, but we certainly have our share down here. So it's been a number of years, almost 15 or so years, since I've been really, really interested in it.
Well, and I know my kids associate with your kids, too, and we've been to these workshops that you've given before, and it's really just phenomenal. So, well, let's jump into some of these. And, Danny, if you'll humor me, I'd like to go through some of the business kind of emergency preparedness items. I've listed a few in my blog today, and then we can maybe transition to some of the personal emergency preparedness topics. I joked about this earlier in the show. I'm a scoutmaster as well, and just love to send my kids home with my little Boy Scouts with a checklist, and they're supposed to have a meeting with their family and talk about exits in the house and what happens if there's a fire and where's our meeting place. And, we'll come to that. I think that's important at the personal level. But in the business, a lot of people don't realize how businesses are affected in an emergency. We see the news, and there's people in shelters, and there's people that are displaced, and they talk about disaster relief for people and rebuilding homes, but they don't talk about those entrepreneurs where their business could be completely devastated, and how are they going to get their business back up and going quickly. And so I've kind of listed 11 different topics that I think a small business owner needs to consider. And I just want to mention some of these. And Danny, I'd love your feedback on these. I know you've talked about these as well. I'll just maybe hit two or three here and kind of get the ball rolling. The first one I talked about is just having a checklist that you can sit down. And for those of you that have a larger business with maybe even just 3 or 4 individuals or 10 or 20, have a staff meeting dedicated to some sort of checklist. Do you have an evacuation plan? Do you have off-site storage? Where are the key records? Which brings me to number 2, where do you keep a copy of all your business records? Do you have a cloud server where you've scanned all of your business documents, tax ID numbers, tax returns, bank records, onto a cloud somewhere? It's so affordable and simple nowadays. It's just absolutely critical you have somewhere. And I'll bring up a third one here, Danny, before I pass it over to you, is employees. If you have employees, have you kept copies of all the personnel records regarding pay and sick time and leave? Do you scan those on a regular basis and keep them on a cloud as well, or at least some sort of off-site storage so that if you have a flood or a fire or something, could you get your employees back on the job quickly and understand where you left off with all of the different the data that's required for employees? Danny, what are some of the things that come to your mind as you talk about business owners that need to be just as aware of emergencies?
Great question. Definitely you want to have your business plan has to be prepared for your physical location where your business happens. Obviously, you have to have the storage like you talked about, cloud servers and so on. You also need to be able to can be able to communicate with your employees. I know several different organizations have text servers where they can send a text and hit everyone in the business. And so you can be able to communicate in a disaster, especially when other types of communication are down.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, if I remember right, you're a ham radio operator. Is that right? Or have you ever done that certification? Or I know that you've talked about it before.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I am a ham radio operator. We have five in our family. That's just something that we do. It's a great way to communicate in a disaster. It's when we had a huge power outage here in Southern California a little while back. One of my teenagers was on the radio before I got home from work, and he knew exactly what happened, when it was going to come back up, because he'd been talking to people down in San Diego, you know, quite a ways away on the ham radio.
So cool. Hey, can I ask, what's your handle? What's your ham radio handle?
It is KJ6DTA.
That's cool. That's awesome. I'm glad you even know it by memory. So communication, I love that you bring that up. Do you have a way to communicate with your employees, your partners? Now, what did you say, some sort of text server, or what? Can you be a little more detailed? Like, what you meant? I don't know what that means.
Okay, there are different. There's a company called GroupMe. It's online where you can set up a group, where you send a text and it goes out. It's a free service, and it goes out to everybody within your group. And so within the different organizations that I'm part of, we have different GroupMe services set up. And as soon as there's a disaster of any type or a threat, I get a text letting me know what's going on. Obviously, social media, Twitter does a great job at this as well. You know, back when there was a major earthquake back east a year or so ago, the Twitter tweets went faster than the shockwaves from the earthquake.
Oh, my gosh, you're kidding. Wow, wow. Very interesting. Well, let me throw out another topic here, too. This is on my checklist I give, is preparing for an emergency, knowing that there's going to be damage, is taking pictures and video of your equipment, your business, your inventory. If you have a rental property, are you taking pictures of your assets so that you could make an insurance claim later and being able to support your claim? I knew several clients that had rental properties on the East Coast, and when Sandy hit, there were several clients of ours that had rental properties that were paid for. And when Sandy hit, they were completely devastated. There was no mortgage or bank involved, and they literally had to go to the insurance company and try to get as much compensation as they could to either rebuild the rental or take the money and go invest somewhere else. So pictures and videos are just so important. What else comes to your mind, Danny?
Yeah, pictures and videos are definitely important. And obviously that ties back into, where do you store this data? Obviously, if you... pictures and videos are in the same place as the property that gets destroyed, you're out of the loop. So cloud servers, backup copies in different locations is definitely important on that.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm just going to throw out an idea. We use Vimeo and YouTube quite a bit, but what's nice about YouTube and Vimeo is you can make many videos private. So it's almost like a video storage location. Many of the videos you see on my website, folks, are stored on Vimeo, and then my web people can somehow play them from Vimeo, but they're still private if you went to my Vimeo account. So I actually, when I was writing this article over this past week, I thought, you know, I just need to go around and video everything in the house, video everything in the business, just put it on a Vimeo account and lock it down. And then if you know, there it is. That's my cloud for video.
Yeah, that's perfect. Definitely.
Well, I'm going to just bring up a couple more as customers and vendors. If you needed to get, then let me ask this hard question for many of you that are listening. If you had to restart your business tomorrow, do you have a database of all your customers, their contact information, their emails, their phones? How much have they paid? What's your accounts receivable? Is it all sitting on your QuickBooks at the office? When was the last time you did a backup and saved it somewhere? Folks, do a backup and email it to us, at least your accountant, so we've got it. Danny, you'd be shocked to hear this one. This is a good example. I had a client of mine that was in Puerto Rico last week. They landed in the plane, got out, got in their rental car, stopped at a Taco Bell just to get a quick bite to eat. They went inside, came out. Everything in their car was stolen in a matter of 10 minutes. Close $10,000 of technology. His laptop, iPads, phones, everything gone. And he even said, Mark, there were several items I had not even backed up anywhere. And he was just like, ah, oh, man, just the work it's going to take to rebuild all this crap. So, I mean, an emergency or disaster may not be a Katrina flood. I mean, it could be anything, Danny. I mean, it doesn't have to be a traditional disaster.
Absolutely. You know, FEMA even has guides that are posted online on what to do in an emergency, how to establish a safe place within your business and how to back all this up. So there's lots of help online from the government. Obviously, they're the ones that first responders and all, any disaster, and so they made it easy for us to get prepared for our business. I'm sure you have some stuff posted as well.
Yeah, you know, great comment. We've got a little chatter going on in the chat line. I want to bring this up. Thomas pointed out that he uses Evernote quite a bit, and also CrashPlan is a good cloud backup. Also, I wanted to repeat on the chat line this website that you referred to, Danny, groupme.com, groupme.com. And Lisa in the studio says her husband is a ham radio operator. Hey, Lisa, I want to get this out here because this is pretty serious. I want to know, Lisa, what's your handle? What is it?
I don't have a handle. My husband has a handle. I don't do the ham radio.
You know, ever since I saw Live Free and Die Hard, I wanted to get a handle. You know, I loved how Bruce Willis was, you know.
You don't get the really cool name handles. They're just numbers, I think.
They are.
It's nothing too sexy.
They're
huh?
boring. Right. Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah. Well, Danny, tell us about that, Danny. How hard is it to become a ham radio operator?
Good question. You know, there's classes that you can take. The organization that governs ham radios, because you have to it's an FCC license that you get to be able to operate a ham radio. And there are various community groups that of radio operators who hold the test. You can take a test every month. There's several different online websites that you can go to take practice tests. And then you go take the test. The test is 30 questions. It's not real difficult. It just takes a few hours worth of studying and just a limited two or three equations for the electronics portion of it, and and you can pass.
No, I didn't plan on talking so much about this, but it's fascinating to me. And I don't think maybe many of our listeners don't know the benefit of ham radio, but I'll just give my layman's term understanding is the cool thing about a ham radio is you have this little walkie-talkie, for lack of a better word. It could be look like a CB radio in your home that's a little more substantial with a huge antenna, but it could be as simple as a walkie-talkie type thing in the trunk of your car that's ran on batteries, and no matter even if cell towers are down or power is down, your ham radio still works. Is that right?
That is correct. It's entirely radio-based. You know, the handheld devices that you're referring to, you can get them for under $100 now. They used to be there were several hundred dollars, thousands of dollars, but now under $100, you can have a device and be connected constantly anytime you need it.
Anywhere in the world?
Anywhere in the world. You know, they operate by line of sight, and so each radio, depending on the powers, you know, I may be able to hit 20 miles based on where my location is, but you can also hit connections that will then connect to the Internet. You can talk to the space shuttle back when those are running through your ham radio. You can communicate to other countries based on an Internet connection to ham radio.
Wow. So if my son's in Idaho, and he's got a ham radio, and I got a ham radio, and there's an emergency, ultimately we'll be able to somehow connect through these transponders and get together through the ham radio system.
That is correct. There are ways to get through, because even though our local service may be down here, you may be able to hit a tower somewhere that can then relay through the Internet to a local tower at his location.
Very, very interesting. Well, okay, so as we talk about these business emergencies, let me just summarize this on the business side, and then I want to get into the personal. But the last thing is, I just can't emphasize enough, in my opinion, and I'd love to hear your feedback, Danny, again, is having all of your technology and your insurance policies, pictures, video, a list of your customers somewhere backed up on a regular basis off-site. Now, it used to be everybody would do it off-site. They'd make copies once a week and take this disc or this tape and put it off-site. Someone was in charge of taking it home with them. But now with cloud servers, everything can be scanned and ran up to this cloud on a regular basis, and you have a redundancy. A lot of times with these cloud places, they then take your data and save it a third place or a fourth place. Is that right?
Yeah, that's definitely the way to go. And you can try various different cloud servers. Sometimes these go down as well. Sometimes they go out of business. Yeah, so duplicity is not a bad idea, even when you're using cloud-based servers.
That's very interesting. Okay, I want to look at our chat line here, see if we've got some chatter going on here. Last thing is a supply kit, which I think is a good transition to our personal plan. A lot of people, as I look at the SBA guidelines and as I read on disaster relief sites, they recommend not only a supply kit at home, which I want to come to, but in your business, where you've got a supply kit or backpack or, you know, something at work that, depending on the number of employees you have, where if there was an emergency, do you have enough bottled water on site? Do you have some pre-made meals? You know, what happens if you had to hunker down at work for several days in a dire emergency? Could you take care of your employees? These supply kits, this is something you've been really involved in, Danny, making sure that people have a home emergency kit, but this would obviously translate to the business as well.
Absolutely. You got to be prepared wherever you are. You never know when a disaster is going to strike. They don't always strike at night when you're at home. Things happen all day long. So, yes, you need to be able to care for those that are on site. And you'll find that there are those, if you're prepared, you'll find people lots of people around you that are not prepared, whether you're at home or whether you're at the office or on a job somewhere. And so the better prepared you are, the more you can help others in that case.
Well, let's talk about some of these supplies that you think are critical. If you had to kind of rattle off some items that you'd want to, that you have personally at home, maybe you don't go to this extent at the workplace, but what are some of the things you do at home at least?
Okay, good question. The first step is you got to have a 3-day kit, 72-hour kit we call them. Your basic food supplies, enough water for 72 hours, and a good rule of thumb is a gallon per person per day. And whether that be at the office or whether at home, that's just for drinking. That's not even for bathing. You want more for bathing and other hygiene purposes. You need to have cash and small bills. When the power's out, stores will be able to open at some point, but they may not have their servers up to be able to process things on the cash register, so small bills really is helpful. Obviously, a first aid kit is really important. We have a really massive one at our house. We keep one in each one of our vehicles as well. And then at the workplace, we always have one there as well. And then you want to have some sort of shelter supplies. Go ahead.
Oh, well, let me just interject on the 72-hour kit. In fact, I think it was your wife that inspired mine to get a good 72-hour kit. And my wife bought backpacks. There's a red backpack for each one of us in the family. She took out a permanent marker, wrote our names on it. And then for a few months, she was just putting all sorts of cool stuff in this backpack, water, a minor first aid. I don't think we have cash in there. I really want to, I've got to double check with her on that. But she's got some basic food, you know, a little, and I think she even had everybody put an extra pair of shoes in there. Because they say in an earthquake, glass could be everywhere. You may not have shoes handy. So she has all the kids put these backpacks under their beds. So, and I've got my backpack. It's under my bed, so if there was an emergency, I can just pull that out, throw it on my back, and run out of the house, and I've got 72 hours worth of gear. And again, I think you inspired us to do that. But I suspect you have something similar for your family?
We do, yes. You know, we've actually broken down a little further. The preparedness for a disaster, you really need to prepare for the different time frames after a disaster. So the first 3 minutes after a disaster strikes, say it happens at night, we have something similar tied to our beds, and it has a pair of shoes, a pair of gloves, a whistle in the kids' backpacks, and a flashlight. This will help you get out of your you know, get out of your house in a disaster and be able to reunite with those that are important to you, your loved ones. And so we call that a three-minute kit. And then there's a three-hour kit where we have things that are more tailored to search and rescue, the radio, emergency radio, battery-operated radio, some a pry bar, some duct tape, caution tape, rope, things that are based on helping get people out, and also important documents, copies of birth certificates and passports. So that's in like a three-hour kit. And then the 72-hour kit, of course, would have all those things that we talked about, the food, some shelter supplies, hygiene supplies, and so on.
Wow, gosh, you just got my mind spinning here. I love this. I love being prepared. And this is, again, it's probably the scout in me, but gosh, I'm just thinking of all the things I haven't done. Now, what have you done further than 72 hours? Do you have a food supply at the house and water supply that if you had to hunker down in your house? And I think of the people that were really affected with Sandy. I think of the people right now that are listening to this show that are in sub-zero temperatures, and they may not be able to get out of the house. Power lines could be down. Again, it could be as simple as inclement weather could force you to be in your house for a week or two. What do you do in that case, Danny?
Great question. You know, it's important to have adequate food to feed your family and those that would be in your location, ideally for up to 3 months. And it's not things that you can't normally use. It's going when you go to the grocery store and they have a 10 for 10, we'll buy 10 of them and put two in your rotation, store some in an extra pantry somewhere. Things that you normally eat, so it's not a huge change for you. Obviously, the water storage is important. We have a large water tank on the side of our house, and so in a disaster, we have that. And then we also have bottled water, which is important to make more easier to use and so on. And, of course, the having some savings built up. A disaster doesn't necessarily have to mean an earthquake or a fire. It could be a temporary loss of employment. You want to be able to be prepared to weather whatever type of storm might come your way.
Oh, just phenomenal advice. Have you ever thought about going off the grid? I mean, that's probably I know you're stuck here in Orange County, California, and it probably drives you crazy, but do you ever sit there and just dream of living off the grid? You probably do, don't you?
There are times. Whenever I get stuck in traffic, you know, I'm there.
Well, you know, I think you heard me with my little introduction about 15, 20 minutes ago that I'm going to have this special author on hopefully in the next month or so. His name is J.J. Luna, who talks about living off the grid and disappearing, living with a post office box and being careful what you disclose. It is just interesting. And there's all different degrees. That's one thing that this Mr. Luna talks about is we can do better with our privacy and our identity protection without having to live off the grid. But this, I think this is so intertwined with it. I think of, again, these folks that just had all their technology stolen. A disaster could be not only a house fire, it could be a burglary, and having to rebuild some of the technology in the house. I think I'm really good at backing up my business servers, but I don't think I have much of any sort of backup of our family records and pictures. I don't know. I think there's so much more I could do at a family level.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. You know, we just hit the 20-year anniversary here of the Northridge earthquake, and, you know, there were 57 deaths during that time, during that short earthquake, but 5,000 injured, and some were out of their houses for months on end. So they were sheltering in place, living in their backyards, and so for some reason, for some of them, it was quite a period of time before they can get back into their homes. So it's, and I can't imagine that, if you can just imagine the businesses that were damaged, people's rental properties, as you mentioned earlier. And so we just need to be ready for whatever might happen. And the more ready you are, the less fear you have should something happen later on.
Yep. I just got an email from Eric, one of our listeners, and he said, I'm going to paraphrase a little bit. He says, Mark, in order to get more organized in our home, we organized a community street meeting where we looked at all of our emergency preparedness needs as a street and got our neighbors involved, and it gave us a lot more comfort and support that if there was an emergency, there's a group of us looking out for each other. Great comment, Eric. What are your thoughts about reaching out in your community about this too?
you know, that's a phenomenal idea. You know, we've done the same. We had a group meeting in our little cul-de-sac, and I was thrilled to find out that on my street I have a registered nurse and a former paramedic, two Eagle Scouts besides myself, people that had a lot of background that I didn't know of, and we just met together as we talked about this. There's actually a website that we put together, and if you don't mind putting the plug in, it's Neighbors Helping Neighbors, and it's nhnpreparedness.org. And on the website, we've broken it down to on how to plan a community meeting, just like your listener Eric was talking about, but also the steps on what to do. There's a series of three-minute videos for each of the steps for emergency preparedness, and one of them is how to plan how to pick a block captain, how to have a family emergency plan, and then have a community-based plan like he was talking about. Just a great idea.
Well, give us that website again. And, you know, folks, you may have think I threw that softball to Danny on purpose, but I forgot about that you had created that Neighbors Helping Neighbors program. Tell us the website again for that.
Okay, it's NHN, standing for Neighbors Helping Neighbors, preparedness.com. So NHNpreparedness.com.
Okay, I'm going to it right now. I want to look at this while we're looking at it. Oh, this is great. I love this. Oh, look at disaster. Oh, look at this video and pictures. And, oh, man, Danny, this is just awesome. I got to get the family together and watch this. I like this. Three little videos. What is a block captain? Gosh, this has to be one of the most inspiring shows I've had in a long time, because this just really hits home for me of how important it is. And I'm just going to be blunt here. Oh, go ahead, Danny.
I was going to say, if you hit the training materials page on the top, and it takes you to there's handouts for each of the different steps of preparedness. And there's actually a video. You mentioned Vimeo earlier. We have them all posted on Vimeo. And they're just a three-minute video. What helps is you just watch a video, spend a week or so with your family or with your business getting ready for that step, and then you move on to the next one.
Oh, it's just phenomenal. I love this. And I was just going to say, Danny, and I'd love to get your, you know, thoughts on this just in our last minute or so here, is this is something people have to take serious. I mean, you'd have to have your head in the sand completely to not notice that this world has changed. It is not what it was like 30, 40, 50 years ago, or even 10, 20 years ago. There are more disasters, more just scary things going on than ever before. We can't just ignore the issue.
No, I agree. Your mom is right in your intro comments. We've had way more disasters than we've had in the past. The world is changing, and we just need to be ready. Pull together as a group, as a family, as a church group, as a community, as a business, and just be ready for these disasters.
Yeah, I highly encourage all of you, please, if you found this show to be helpful, it's recorded. There's a link to it, of course, on Blog Talk Radio on iTunes. You can share this radio show with others. Please do so on your social network. And I know there's a little bit of tax and legal the first half hour, but hopefully this has been helpful to you. Danny, just thank you so much for finding some time to come in and talk with us about this. And again, I'm already just flipping through all the different pages here on your site. I forgot about this. I love it. Neighbors Helping Neighbors. And, any final words, Danny, that you'd like to just encourage us all to take this seriously?
You know, yes, the most important part is to take a step, whatever that first step is. If it's getting together your three-minute kits, do it today. And then when you're done with the first step, move on to the second step. If a disaster happens and you've only got to step three, well, you're three steps ahead of most people. So get started, make a kit, make a plan, and get started.
Well, I love it. And it's something we all need to take seriously, and just so, so powerful. And Danny Kirkham, thank you for joining us today. Another important topic for all of us as business owners and just plain old good old Americans trying to live the dream. I really appreciate you being with us.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, you bet. Well, folks, thanks for spending your time with us, your valuable time for a show here, the Mark Kohler Show here every Tuesday. Please spread the good word, and next week we've got an awesome topic on investing in mobile homes and RV parks around the country. What are the strategies to make it? additional income with mobile home parks rather than your brick-and-mortar rental property. We've got some special guests with us, so check it out, and we'll see you next Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.